Om Parthaya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Pratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvamanusantatami Bhagavad-gita Bhagavad-vashini. So we are on Bhagavad-gita, chapter 18, and verse 34. Verse 33, we did the sattvika dhriti. Now we're going to do the rajasa and the tamasa dhriti. Dhriti means resolve. You know, the resolve to do something, is being able to hold a commitment or a desire to actually accomplish something, rather than kind of like a gadfly, you have a little desire to do something, but then you had another one and another one, and so you're not able to really pursue. Dhriti means you can hold a resolve to actually do something, but there's different types of resolve, you know, sattvika, rajasa and tamasa. So we're doing the tamasic now. I mean the rajasic. So repeat after me. Yayatu dharma kamartan. Yayatu dharma kamartan. Tritya dharaya dharaya terjuna. Tritya dharaya terjuna. Vasangena palakanchi, Vasangena palakanchi, Dhritissa partha rajasi, Dhritissa partha rajasi. Yaya tu dharma kama artan, Dhritya dharayate arjuna, Vasangena palakanchi, Dhritissa partha rajasi. So he says, hey Paritha, name for Arjuna, that dhriti, that resolution of mind, that being able to hold a commitment, a pravritti, an inclination to go forward on something, that dhriti is rajasic. Rajasic, you know, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Rajasic means my mind itself. If we want to say, just really quickly for sattva, rajas, and tamas, a mind that enjoys sattva is a mind that has a natural shanti. It has a peacefulness to it. It actually enjoys being with itself. It enjoys dharma. It enjoys the ananda of shanti. It's not seeking or running about in the world trying to find peace, trying to find peace through the fulfillment of a desire. You know, it's not attached to the world in that way, as you must, talking to the world, you must fulfill my desires. You must give me this so that I can be happy. You must not do that so I can be happy. So it's a very extroverted mind. But I can have a lot of energy. I can have a dhriti, a lot of energy toward the world, toward my behavior, toward my relationship with the world. I can have a lot of energy and resolve to get what I need from the world to make me happy. Even though actually this making me happy only has to do with the immediate pleasure I gain from satisfying a desire. You know, that's the problem with rajas, that's the very problem with samsara. I can put a tremendous amount of energy into the fulfilling of a desire, and I may gain the desired object, which can stay with me for a long time, but the ananda or the pleasure I gain from that lasts for a very short time. It's always being displaced by another desire. It always tends to be a shock for people. You get to keep the object or the situation that you work so hard for, but you don't get the peace of mind, except for a momentary, short period of time, that you thought that the fulfillment of that desire would give you. But for whatever reason, this takes a long time to discover. Because once a person discovers this, just through the assimilation of experience, one tends to become a mumuksha. Mumuksha means one who really desires freedom or liberation, because once I discover that all of this dritti, all of this resolve, all of this commitment to fulfilling these desires, you know, only gives momentary happiness. I'm stuck with the objects, but only momentary happiness. And you realize that that's an invariable variable. That's not going to change. And yet what I'm seeking is a happiness that's lasting. And then I find that I'm not going to get that from the world. And so now my drishti, my vision changes. Where can I get that? How can I get that? And that creates a more sattvika type of attitude, more sattvic type of attitude, as we've been seeing. But here we're looking at that dritti that is not sattvic, but the dritti that is rajasic. And so here's what it says. He says, hey Arjuna, hey Partha. Partha means the son of Prithu. That's his name, one of the names for his father. He says, that rajasic dritti by which a person sustains that dritti, by which dritti a person sustains their drive for their commitment to dharma, kama, and artha. Dharma here means punya, because within the Vedic fold I know that the gain of punya will give me the merits that I need to have a better next life, you know, better birth, or to experience heaven worlds. And so I can actually have a resolve to accrue punya by doing dharmic good actions, doing charity, all types of things, so that I can gain that type of life. I can actually have a desire for that. Let my next life be even better than this one. In my next life, let me have a more athletic body. Let me have more wealth. Let me have a bigger family. Let me have more power in the world. Whatever it may be, it could be a number of things, but I can have the resolve to do punya, to do dharma, to accrue punya so that I can have that. And so that I can have a resolve for dharma to gain kamas, desired objects in the future, or artha in the future. Artha is security. A nice home, good money, strong family, you know. I do dharma to gain these things in the future or in my next lives. Or I have a resolve to do that dharma to gain these kamas and arthas in the future. Or I also have dritti, that resolve, rajasic resolve, to gain desired objects here itself. Or to gain security, money, power, a secure family, home base, here itself. That's my resolve. So my resolve, my commitment, is for the fulfillment of my desires, even in terms of dharma, in terms of kama, desired objects, or in terms of artha, my security. So my drishti, my vision, is out there. And so he says, so this dritti is for the person who's called a pala akanshi, the one who has a result in mind. It's not a karma yogi. For the karma yogi, I am doing karmas for antakarana shuddhi. I'm doing actions. My resolve is always geared toward dharma, and it's geared toward dharma, not for punya or to avoid papa. It's geared toward dharma to gain this antakarana shuddhi, a purity of mind, a mind that's more available for knowledge so that I can gain moksha. That's not considered a pala. Pala means an object, the result of an action. I'm not doing all of these things. I'm not living my life here in order to get things. I'm living my life here in order to, in such a way that I can gain the antakarana shuddhi, that purity of mind that will allow me to gain knowledge. Purity of mind just means a level of shanti, a level of peace in the mind so that my mind is available to gain this knowledge. So when the teacher is teaching, my mind can actually be present. Because What if the teacher is teaching, you've gotten so far as to get to this knowledge, but the mind doesn't have the shanti? So our mind has a relative degree of shanti, availability, and through our karma yoga and also upasana and different types of pranayama and meditation, but mostly attitude, my shanti continues to increase so that my mind can be more present. You know, I don't know. You just to make it clear what I mean. Do you know how sometimes when you're reading a book, especially if it's not your book that you would like to read, but it's a book you have to read, so you may read the first paragraph and be following it, but all of a sudden you find that your two or three pages have gone by and you have no idea what's been said. Yeah. We all know what this is, right? So it's the same if you're attending a lecture or a talk. How much of the talk do you actually hear? And how much is your mind gone? It's distracted by this and that and this and that. And so say you're at a talk where you're trying to gain knowledge, self-knowledge. You would like your mind to be present, right? But the mind has a lot of distractions. It has enough clarity to be present, to even have an interest in this knowledge. And then in certain areas, it's distractible or hurt or it's dealing with this or that or the other thing. All of these things become a sadhana that we work on through karma yoga or whatever. But for a rajasic mind, there's no karma yoga, there's no mumukshutvam, there's no desire for liberation, there's a desire to fulfill these desires so that I can be happy. And so he says, prasangena, as they come up, as these desired objects come up, then my desire for them is there. And when the desire is there, I have the dritti, I have the resolve, you know, to be able to pursue and to fulfill those desires. So that's considered the rajasic dritti. Yeah. It's not, the rajasic dritti need not be a bad thing. It's not that the person has to be a thief or something like that. It's just samsara. It's just a samsara. It means that my focus is on samsara and the objects in samsara. There's the mumukshutvam isn't there. I haven't really realized the problem. You know? And I have the energy to get what I want. But what I want is out here, right? Either in terms of dharma for a better next life, or in terms of kamas, objects of desire, or in terms of artas, things that I need for my security. My energy goes there, right? And so that's rajasic dritti. Now he goes, he talks about tamasic dritti, and he says like this, so repeat after me. Yaya swapnam bhayam shokam, yaya swapnam bhayam shokam, vishadam madamevacha, vishadam madamevacha, navimuchanti dhurmedha, navimuchanti dhurmedha, dhritisa tamasi mata, dhritisa tamasi mata, yaya swapnam bhayam shokam vishadam madam evacha na vimuchati durmedha dhritihi sa tamasi mata. He says that dhriti, which is considered tamasa, that dhritihi sa tamasi mata, that dhriti, which is considered tamasic. Tamas means very, very dull. The mind just doesn't really have a lot of energy, and it's heavy in ajnanam. It's heavily weighted with ignorance. Ignorance and sleep. Sleepy ignorance, so it says. So that type of mind, na vimuchati, that type of mind is not free. In fact, is never free, because there's an eva there. It never finds itself free from swapna, from sleep. Vimuchati means it's navimuchati. It doesn't it's a negative type of resolve. I just can't give up my sleep. Just let me sleep, you know. I love to go to sleep. So let me sleep. And swapna also means dream. So I'm either like to sleep, or when I'm awake, let me just daydream about how things could be. I'll just spend my time, let me just worry. I worry, and I'm thinking all the time about how things could be. That's swapna, it's dreaming, it's daydreaming. Mm-hmm. I don't always call it that way, but that's what it is. Mm-hmm. I spend all my time daydreaming, which is self-exhausting, but especially when the daydreams for tamas is going to be negative. I spend my time daydreaming swapna, and then going to sleep. So I'm daydreaming or going to sleep. When I'm daydreaming, what am I daydreaming about? Bhaya, the things that I'm afraid of. Mm-hmm. So I'm vimuchati, navimuchati, I can't get rid of my fears. I'm worried about this, I'm afraid of this, I'm afraid of this, that this might happen and that might happen. Maybe my money will be stolen, or I'll be a failure, or I'll end up with nothing, or whatever the fears are, you know. Or I'll lose all my respect, or whatever the things that worry you, those are the things that the mind is reveling in. And it's not able to let it go. Na eva vimuchati, it can't get rid of it. Okay? So all it wants to do is sleep or daydream, and when it's daydreaming, it's full of bhaya. And also not the daydreams, it's not like they're happy daydreams. Okay? It's bhaya, fear. Worried about this, worried about this, worried about this. Shoka. Shoka is suffering and pain and sorrow. So this is something, I think this is so valuable for people for all of us to continue to realize. When you're in the present, just here, with whatever is happening, the people that you're with, the situation that you're in, the things that you're being called on to do, there's usually not any bhaya or shoka, you know. That would be unusual. The bhaya, the fear, and all of the sorrow and the worry or the pain is all jiva-srishti. That's all in the daydream. That's all imagination. So once we start to realize this, you can tell your mind that this is jiva-srishti means your own creation. You're creating this in your mind. It's like a dream in your mind that you're living out. Your dreams are full of emotion and full of affect. But you have to realize, this is just a dream. I'm just making this whole thing up. There's no such thing happening right now. I'm making the whole thing up and I'm living it out. I'm living in my little movie. That's what it is, honestly. And so when we realize it, then we can pull it back and say, wait, what is happening here now? And just always get used to doing that. If you find yourself living in a movie, you know, to say, this is a movie, let me pull it back and live here. Be with Bhagavan, be with Ishvara. Let me live in Ishvara's world, not in this jiva-srishti, the jiva's creation, the individual's creation. So you find that shoka, that pain and sorrow that is really something I'm worried about and I'm suffering over, some sorrow, you know, that will tend to go away. And worse than the sorrow, but a result of the sorrow, a result of the fear, the worry, all of the worry, and also the sorrow that comes from often my imagination about what somebody's doing to me or what's happening to me. It's usually not about the reality, because the reality is right in the present, you know. So if there's a kalpita, it's kind of a making all of this up, you know, even though it's directed to something that is actually occurring, a situation that's actually occurring. You'll find that the suffering and the sorrow part of what is actually occurring is made up. Mm. It's something that you're doing in your mind. Otherwise, you're just objectively dealing with a situation that is there. But the mind makes up all kinds of stuff around it. And that's the shoka. That's the sorrow toward a particular situation. The vishada, the next one, so he's got a list here. Swapna is the sleep and imaginal life. Bhayafear, shoka, sorrow and worry over a particular thing. Vishada is like depression. Vishada is that ongoing sadness, ongoing kind of depressed attitude, you know, that nothing works for me, nothing is right for me. It's vishada. So shoka is directly towards something. Vishada is just, the vishada is just a very weighty, like a depressed state. So there's that one. And then, and why wouldn't you feel depressed if the others are all happening? You know, like if you're all, if the swapna is there, you're either asleep or you're living in your imagination. And the imagination consists of worry, so fear, right? And then worry and fear over what? Over what's going to happen in this situation. You know, there's something happening that is difficult. And so you'll find that if you're here in the present, then you're dealing with this difficult thing, whatever it is. But what often happens is the mind is creating a story around it that's full of emotion and sorrow and suffering. It's catastrophic thinking around the difficult situation. That's shoka. And the vishada, because that's happening so much, you always feel like you're in this kind of depressed state. And then madan is what I do to get out of it in a tamasic way. Just simple sense pleasure. You know, maybe I'll eat a lot. Watch TV. Go to movies. Get snacks. All kinds of things, just, you know, just to distract myself.
Ice cream.
But what if that's all I have going for myself? See what I mean? What if the only relief from this imaginary, I say it's imaginary because of the swapna, it is mostly imaginary. We don't really realize that until we stop and look at what's really going on. You're either objectively dealing with a situation and there's no problem, you're doing what needs to be done. Or you're lost in an imaginal soup of worry and fear around it. And say, if that's all the mind knows, or its commitment is to that, like in Swamiji's little commentary on this, he says the person, this tamasic, when you're overcome by this kind of tamas, your commitment is to being like this. No matter what a person tries to tell you or how much they try to get you to stop it, and to do something else, you can't, they won't. The commitment is so strong, you know. So it can be frustrating because you want to help this person get out, but they won't, because their commitment is toward being this way. It's a strong commitment. Not that these tamas and rajas, they're not cast in stone. You can change it. That's why Krishna is telling us all of this. Because when that tamas is there and you recognize it, you can actually do something about it. But sometimes you have to bring things to consciousness. It's the same with the rajas, that dritti. Oh, I'm spending all of my energy trying to make this happen and that happen. Why? You know, then I can start really thinking about it. We have to bring it into consciousness first. Another thing that madan means is also an arrogance. You know, the first one is just it's intoxication. Madan means intoxication. Where I'm just with sense enjoyment, or I'm drinking, or I'm doing whatever I can just to keep myself occupied so that I don't have to deal with all of this depression and vishada and all of these things. Or it can also, madan can also be arrogance. And arrogance is always kind of a cover-up for my own lack of self-worth. Arrogance is a meaningless thing. It's a very sad thing. Arrogance keeps you away from other people. You know, arrogance is a form of protecting yourself and keeping yourself away from other people. You know, so it's a very superficial feeling. It's just a protective feeling to kind of keep yourself contained, keep other people away from you. Really, that's what you're doing. You know, if we're arrogant, we're keeping everybody away from us. And so that arrogance is just a, it's just a defense. So he says, all of this is durmedha. All of this is just, it's really wrong thinking. It's not wrong, it's more than wrong thinking. It's, how to say it? Medha. Medha means, has a lot to do with not just knowledge, but it has to do with knowledge that is, we remember. It's remembered knowledge. If you have medha shakti, it means that you've learned something well. Yeah, and so that it's something that you don't forget. It's with you all of the time. That's why when we do the Dakshinamurti mantra, we ask for medha in terms of jnanam. May we gain this knowledge, and may we gain it in such a way that we hold it, that it's remembered. That's medha. So jnanam is we gain the knowledge. So we ask Bhagavan, please give us this knowledge. Atma jnanam. And give me medha. Give me the ability to hold it, to remember that it be embodied in me. That's medha shakti. This is durmedha, means that knowledge, those conclusions that are very well held, but they're dur. Dur is bad. Dur means that it's a negative knowledge. It's a negative orientation toward life, toward myself. So that it's negative conclusions. They're rooted negative conclusions that nobody can shake me from. You can't get the person because dritti means that resolve is there. But what if the resolve has at its heart these negative ingrained conclusions? That's durmedha. Medha is a very strong word. And so we want medha shakti. We want that for what is positive. We want that for our knowledge, the thing that really blesses us. We want medha shakti. It means we're living it. Nothing pushes it away. It's stronger than everything else. That's medha shakti in terms of knowledge. But what if it's durmedha? Nothing pushes it away, you know? But it's tamas. And so it's not something that blesses me. You know, I can't get rid of it. I can't make it go away. And so that's that tamas of dritti. So now, these are the three drittis. Now, he's going to go into something else, which is ananda. He's going to ananda, or what is happiness, or sukha. And looking at ananda, the three types of ananda. I'm going to do just the first one. We'll probably do it next week also, because it's really, really nice. But to do it, we chant both of these verses because the two verses are connected together. Okay. Sukham tvidanin trividam. Sukham tvidanin trividam. Shrinume parashabha. Shrinume paratarashabha. Abhyasat ramate yatra. Abhyasad ramate yatra dukantancha nigacchati dukantancha nigacchati yataragre vishad vishamiva yataragre vishamiva pariname mritopamam pariname mritopamam tatsukam satvikam proktam Tatsukam sattvikam proktam Atma buddhi prasadajam Atma buddhi prasadajam Sukham tu idanim Trividam shrinume bharatarshaba Abhyasat ramate yatra Dukantam na nigacchati. He says, hey, Bharatarshaba. Bharatarshaba means of all of the Bharata clan, the one who is Rishaba, the bull of the Bharatas, means the one who is the most exalted of the whole lineage, the Bharata lineage, that one who is most exalted. Shrinume, listen to me. May you listen to me now. About what? Tu idam idanim now means now. Now listen to me about this sukha, this happiness, which is threefold, trividam. Threefold means sattva, rajas, and tamas. So listen to me now about the sukha. What is really the ananda, the type of happiness? There's threefold type of happiness also. You know? So first the sukha, so first the sattrika. So he says, abhyasat, so first, abhyasat uramate yatra dukantam cha nigacchati. He says, where one revels, ramate, one finds ananda. Ram means to revel. Revel means to revel in something that makes you very whole and happy. Revels because of abhyasa. Abhyasa is a word that they use for like the repetition of something. Here the abhyasa is shravana, manana, nididhyasana. The abhyasa means continual bringing, exposing yourself to this knowledge, doing the manana that is necessary over and over and over again, is necessary to understand it, and nididhyasana, the contemplation, which is necessary to own it. So that's the abhyasa. It's not that you come to this knowledge, which Bhagavan is giving to Arjuna. That this is the knowledge, what Bhagavan is teaching. The knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita is the Upanishads. That's why the Bhagavad Gita is considered an Upanishad. So, as like an Upanishad, because the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita is the knowledge that is contained in the Upanishads. They're not different, right? And so Bhagavan is telling to Arjuna, it's from the abhyasa, from repeating, from the repetition of this, you must do shravana. Shravana means you have to listen. You have to expose yourself to this teaching until you don't have to anymore. One question the teacher should always ask the teacher, how long do I have to listen? How many times? When will it be over? How many years? Months? Weeks? Months? Years? How long does it last? It lasts until you have to listen until you don't have to listen anymore. So it's not a given amount of time. Everyone has their own time. You know, because it's a matter of seeing, a matter of understanding, and manana, a matter of clearing up your doubts. Say you're listening, but then a doubt comes, yeah, but what about this? Why couldn't it be like that? Well, that's absolutely legitimate, but that doubt needs to be answered. So now that doubt is answered, but another one comes. Well, what about this, and why shouldn't it be like that? And what happens if this happens? Another doubt that needs to be dealt with. And so until your mind can move through the universe like the wind, with no boulders in its way, those boulders means those doubts need to be tended to for clarity. There's no shortcuts to clarity. Yeah. Because your mind being what it is, needs to know. Your mind doesn't say, well, it's all right, I kind of understand, I don't understand that, and I don't understand this part of that part of that part, but it doesn't matter. No, the mind goes to what you don't understand. What you do understand, it just rests so gently, right? It rests so lightly. You don't even notice it because there's no ajnananda, there's no ignorance there. The mind notices what it doesn't know. That's where the mind goes, and that's where it should go, and you should allow it to go there. And sit there until these areas of resolution take place for however long it takes. Yeah. That's the sadhana in terms of shravana, manana, nididhyasana. That's the jnana sadhana. That's the means for gaining knowledge. Yeah. So you have to allow the mind that freedom to actually inquire and to know. It's not, we can say, people say, you know, this knowledge is beyond the mind. The self is beyond the mind. It's free from the mind. That's true. It's beyond the mind and free of the mind from its own standpoint, but not from the standpoint of the mind. That's the satyam mitya. The mind, the self of the mind is the self, right? The truth of the mind is the self. But the mind is the one that doesn't know that. From the standpoint of the self, your self is already free. There is no problem at all. It's free of the mind. It's free of the. It's free of everything. It's free of sukha and dukkha. It's free of all of the opposites. It just simply is. And nothing ever changes it. But the mind is not that. The mind is always changing and always trying to figure things out and always worried about this, that, and the other thing. So it's this mind that feels bound, this mind that suffers, and it's this mind that needs to know. Even though what it needs to know is already there, it's still suffering from ignorance. It doesn't know. And so it needs to have the freedom to know, because it's the one that has the problem. It doesn't work to try to shut your mind in a closet or something. You know, let's just lock it up in a box, you know, or let's try to just meditate it away or pranayama it away, you know, breathe it away, you know, to just shut it down. And as soon as it starts to raise its little head, do some more pranayama, you know. But you know what? That's just a Band-Aid. That's a Band-Aid, you know. Pranayama is very powerful, but so it's a pretty strong Band-Aid, but it only lasts for a certain amount of time. Right? It's not right to try to shut the mind down. That is not moksha. That's, you know, where you have devices to keep it under wraps. You could as well take drugs. Okay, if it's coming alive again, let's take another drug. You know? Mm-hmm. So, what's the difference? Whether it's, I mean, one drug may be healthier than another. Pranayama is probably healthier than some sort of Xanax or something, or marijuana or whatever. I mean, I don't have any comment on all of that. I'm not trying to make a comment about that. It's just simply that you're using substances to take care of your mind, and substances only will last so long. Or you're using breathing techniques to take care of your mind, or mantras to take care of your mind, but they only last for a short amount of time. So it's not a solution. The best thing is to teach the mind, to give it knowledge so that it knows. When it understands something, it'll be fine. It's no problem. Its problem is ignorance. So here, Abhyasat, it's from sitting in this knowledge that one revels, from the repeated sitting in this knowledge, seeing, Ramate, that person revels. Where that's so, and Dukantam cha nigacchati, and where then he gains an end to suffering. Dukantam, the end, anta means end, Dukantam, the end of suffering. He gains that end of suffering, right? From the reveling, in the abhyasa, repetition of this knowledge. And then he says, and what is that like, that ramate abhyasa, and it coming to an end? Well, he says, at first it's like poison. Mm-hmm. He says, yet ted agre, and that sukha ananda is initially vishamiva. In the beginning, it's like poison, this abhyasa, this sitting in this knowledge. In the beginning, it's like poison, but pariname. But when the transformation takes place, he says, pariname is transformation. In the transformation, it becomes like amrita, like nectar. It starts out like poison, but it becomes like nectar. It's that type of sukha that is sattvika, we call it sattvika. And it's atma-buddhi prasadajam. It's something that is born from the knowledge of the self. So this is a really beautiful verse, these two verses. So I'm going to do them next week. It'll take me a while to do them. Very thorough. I mean, their whole thing is in this, so. Let's do it next week and have tamales now and satsang.
Tamales?
Yeah. Jackie brought us some tamales.
Oh, tamales.
Yeah. It's Christmas.
Me gusta mucho.
Is
it
a Christmas thing?
It's Christmas for me. It's Christmas. Is it a Christmas thing in Mexico? Mm-hmm. Super.
Do you have any salsa también?
No, no traje salsa.
Oh, yeah. Habla español? Muy bien, sí.
Oh. She does.
Let's say our prayer then. Swastik Pajabhya Padipalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahim Mahishaha Go Brahmane Pyashubamastu Nityam Loka Samasta Sukhino Pavantu Kale Varshatu Parajanyaha Prativi Sasya Shalini Desho Yam Kshobarahitaha Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kaschit dukkha bhag bhavet Asato ma sadgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya Mrityorma amritam gamaya Om Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha. Hari Om. Om.
Are the tamales vegan? I've never heard of vegan tamales.
They are vegan, yeah. They're butternut squash and corn and green roasted green chilies.
Who taught you that?
Her mom.
About 14 ladies sitting around an outside oven.
What?
Did you grow up in this?
For a little while, yeah.
Oh. Oh. So I have a question.
Yeah.
So the what's it called? The Shoka.
Yeah, Shoka.
So while you were talking about it, you know, there are things that come up in my life, and especially with work, and where there's a lot of responsibility and you've got to perform, and there's a lot of fear around that.
Yeah.
And some of it seems kind of normal. I mean, everybody in that situation who I talk to, you know, they all feel it. And it seems appropriate. It generates a certain energy to prepare and creativity and all that kind of stuff. And then beyond that, there's stuff that's made up.
Yeah.
It's clearly coming from the swapna.
Yeah.
The way the mind just... So I was just wondering if you could talk about that. Because it seems like a certain amount of fear sometimes is kind of normal and not necessarily made up. It's just sort of built in and natural and maybe helpful.
Well, I would say, well, like, if it's normal and goes along with the situation, then that's handleable. The problem is when it's Jiva Srishti. You know, where you actually are. And I would say most fear, like there's the adrenaline, like for instance, if you're going on stage, there's a natural adrenaline that happens there. You know, or if you're just ready like to dive off the high dive or something like that, there's something that happens. But that is handleable. That's in the present. That's Ishwara. That's so much different than what is usually happening, which is that I'm making something up in my mind that is not really occurring right now. Like, say, for instance, like there's somebody owes you money, but they're not paying the money. Okay? Especially if you're collecting rent or something like that. You know, and then the people don't pay. And then they don't pay and they don't pay. You can just deal with that objectively and work with them to get the money or whatever it is. But what the thing is that that can create a world, you know, a fear around what are they thinking or what are they doing or what's happening. And so then you start living in this made-up reality. That's all I'm saying. And then you're creating suffering around it, which is different than dealing with just the present situation. Like, say there's something happening where it makes you feel anxiety. Then are you dealing with the anxiety, or is the anxiety creating a movie? See, it's really different. Like, say the fear is an objective fear that's being generated by a tiger that's running at you. You know, your instincts have been kicked in. You know, or you're going into a stressful situation. The instincts have been kicked in. Now, do you accept that and deal with it? Then you're in Ishwar Srishti. Or are you gone? Does it take you away into a created world and living out the imaginations of that, living out the sorrows and sufferings of that imaginary world? Do you see the difference?
Mm-hmm. At least in the present is
that. Like, say you have you're anxious about something in the present because there's something happening in the present that is exciting that stress or that worry. What is happening right now is bringing that about. Then you can be dealing with that in the present. That's your task, is to deal with that. That's part of what's happening in the present. That is much different than having that launch an inner movie where then you're dealing with suffering, but suffering is in relationship to the movie, not in relationship to what is actually happening here and now. You're either dealing with the stress or hurt or whatever it is that's happening here and now, or you're dealing with the stress that's being generated off of the movie.
So, like, taking appropriate action is the Dharma in that sense. It's doing what needs to be done in that kind of stress situation.
And then you're
still
focused in this world.
Yes, yes, in the present.
Yeah. The present is Ishwar.
Being on Van Ness Avenue with a placard saying "Vietnam disabled Vietnam vet, please help," gangbangers coming and beating me up—that's a whole different. That's clearly made up.
That's made up. You're thinking of making that up, right?
I make that up. That's my story.
Okay, so if you made that
Van
up,
Ness Avenue,
and then you're going through all the worries of being, this is going to happen to me, and I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be, you know, attacked,
right,
and ruined and finished
sick.
And just a bag boy.
Well, even sick and in the hospital and barely conscious, but enough to feel pain. And
oh man, that is catastrophic thinking.
Yes,
the thing to really realize about catastrophic thinking of all different varieties of it, they produce emotions. They actually, like if you have a nightmare produces emotions, feelings come along with the daydream or the nightmare. They're full of their own feelings. In fact, the unconscious itself, you know, its language is images and feelings. That's it. That's the language of the unconscious. So daydreams come from the unconscious, and nighttime dreams come from the unconscious also. And they're affect, you know, affect laden. And the thing is that feelings seem so much more real than thoughts. You know, so we believe our feelings; they create a reality for us because we're thinking within our feelings. So the feelings are more real. I'd say you're really, as though more real, say you're really feeling sad, right? But all of your thinking is sad then. You're So all the thinking is taking place in the sadness. Or you're really angry. All of your thinking is taking place in the anger. So the anger is more real. See, it lasts longer. So we tend to believe our feelings much more than our thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that the unconscious produces, is what really generates all these feelings. You know?
So when you find yourself caught up in fear, anger, whatever, what's a good thing to do?
Well,
whether you wake up in the middle of the night, which happens to me, or you catch yourself in a sort of night danger.
One thing is just to bring yourself back to the present and simply ask yourself, what is actually happening now? So that you can see the difference between the reality of what is happening now and what I'm imagining. Because, see, the mind doesn't necessarily do that little viveka. It doesn't necessarily do that simple little discrimination. You're just totally lost in the imaginal world, and that's your reality. There's nobody there thinking, is this the reality, or what am I actually doing here? There's nobody doing that. You're just lost in it. And so if you can say, what am I doing? Is this real? Is this actually happening now? Or is this jiva srishti, or is just this my imagination? So you say, no, it's my imagination. Well, let's come back to the present. So that's even doing that. We can teach this in psychology to our clients. But for us in Vedanta, you also have an understanding of Ishvara and the difference between this jiva srishti and Ishvara srishti. Srishti means a creation, like the individual's creation, and Bhagavan, the Lord, this objective reality that we live in. And so I can, as a mumukshu, what I want is to be able to live in Ishvara srishti, and then have my mind revel in the truth of my own being. And so I let this body, mind, sense organs be part of Ishvara. I, in fact, the self really is the self of Ishvara. Right? And so this body is like a cell in Ishvara, just like the cell is a cell in the body. This body is a cell like a cell in Ishvara. So this whole life is actually part of Ishvara's life, part of the total story. And so I can be present to this total story and do what is to be done, participate in it, and do Dharma, participate in it. You know, but I've handed it over to Ishvara, which is my bigger self. It's not like Ishvara is somebody else. You know, Ishvara, the self being the self that I am, if you see, the self that I am is the self in all beings. There's only one self. And this universe then, right, is my body. And this body is part of this total body. So another way of saying it, in terms of my experience, individual experience, this body is part of my prarabdha. The prarabdha is the karma that is taking me through my life. The karma has to do with the world of experience I find myself in. It's not just this body. It's the body, mind, sense organs, and the world which is containing it. And so this body belongs to Ishvara, but in terms of my, it's part of Ishvara, but in terms of my experience, it's part of the prarabdha karma. This is my little piece of Ishvara. And so it's not like I'm just an individual jiva in a concrete world. It's that this whole body, mind, sense organs, environment all come together. Yeah.
But then if the unconscious has these feelings or these images and they're not accessible by thinking, then how does that play out?
They are accessible by thinking, and they're overwhelming you. What happens is, like, when you're, say you're very, something has triggered you, and so you're very kind of, I don't know, catastrophic thinking is taking place. So you're contained in that then, in that emotional realm that is imaginal, but feelings are real, right? They're imaginal, but still, they have some punch for sure. But you have to be able to recognize that and say, I'm overwhelmed now in this imaginal world that I've created. Let me rein that in and just be here in the present and do what needs to be done. So that becomes much more natural to you, to live in the present and do what is to be done. That's much more real. Otherwise, we're missing our life and living our life in this movie that we've created. It's much better to be here and to do what is to be done. So, why, you know what Swamiji says? I do what is to be done to the best of my ability, moment to moment to moment. And that's it, he says. That's what it is.
You know? But sometimes these projections from the unconscious don't seem to be created by yourself. I mean, they seem to be there having their own life.
Well, that's because they're coming from the unconscious. Your mind isn't creating them. Your unconscious is overwhelming. But then your mind can say, is this coming out of my unconscious, or is this my own imagination, or is this existing here in reality? Then you can discern the difference, you know?
Yeah.
And then you can say, all right, let's pull this imaginal world in, and let me just be with Ishwara. It's much more fun to be with Ishwara. It's more stable. Much more stable.
More benign.
Much more benign. Because, you see, if you're just with Ishwara, you're with your prarabdha karma. There is nothing more supportive than your prarabdha karma. The prarabdha, because the prarabdha is yours. It's not anybody else's. So it's absolutely supportive. You have everything that you need in this moment to handle the situation. Not that the situation is easy. I'm not saying it's 50-50 here in terms of punya and papa, in terms of many situations which are not exactly what you would choose. But you have what you need. It's your difficult situation. It's not somebody else's. It's your difficult situation, and you have what you need to handle this difficult situation. That's the important thing. Happy situations we don't have to worry about. That's like time out. That's time off. Those are your vacation moments. But you only get a life that's 50% vacation, 50% work. 50% all is well, this is fun. 50% I have some work to do here. You know, this, it's not exactly what you would want. And so that's where you have to grow. It's good to, that's where it's good to have knowledge and clarity. You know, or it'll make you want to work for knowledge and clarity. Because 50-50 is not that great. Yeah.
Well, you'll be driven unless you get that 100.
You want all to be just fine with me, no matter what the situation. That's what we all want, you know? And say, it's not that people are not unrealistic to say, I want this to become Swargaloka. This should just turn into heaven for me. Let me have moksha, liberation, and let the whole world serve me and just make me happy. That's not realistic. But I would like to be strong and whole and happy in all situations. That's freedom. You know? That my fullness or my wholeness is not at stake. The situation may be difficult. And there can be a lot of losses also. But do I have to have a self-loss? Do I have to lose my own well-being, even though I undergo a loss in the world? And we're all undergoing losses in the world. That's the world. You know? But is my wholeness dependent on the world, my well-being dependent on the world? And it isn't. But I have to understand that. My mind has to understand that and recognize the one who is not dependent. You have a self that is free, but that self has to be discerned because it's mixed up with a mind that's not free. So it all has to be straightened out. It's all just a big confusion. So we have to become unconfused. That's the thing.
You were talking earlier about the self of us, the self of our mind has I forget how you said it now. You say it every time. But there's the self, and then there's our mind that is confused about who it really is.
Right.
And the thing is that the mind it seems like we always have this perspective from the mind, in a way. It's like knowledge is
that
knowing
perspective.
Who we are, but it's not like we look from knowledge into the
we
mind.
We do look from knowledge. The knowledge that the mind gains changes the perspective that the mind has. And yourself, once it recognizes the self and differentiates it from the mind, yourself is always present and always free, but it hasn't been differentiated. The self doesn't have to do the differentiation. It's non-dual. The mind does the differentiation. Right? And then the mind, the buddhi, has knowledge of the nature of the mind and the nature of the self.
And yet it still looks from these eyes, tastes with this mouth, smells with this mouth.
Yes, but there's one thing you have to remember there. That's true. The eyes still function, the nose, the sense organs still function.
And they're still part of the jiva srishti.
Absolutely.
The body, mind, sense organs.
That still continues functioning.
Yeah.
But what has been differentiated is the changelessness of your being, which is self-evident. Consciousness is self-evident. It doesn't need the mind or the sense organs to become aware of it. It needs the ignorance. This is the palavyapti and vrittivyapti. The mind, the ignorance of the mind has to go. Because the mind, once the ignorance is gone, the mind doesn't make that mistake anymore. It recognizes itself, and the self-shining of my own self is self-evident.
And even after that realization, the mind is still present.
Still present, still thinking, sense organs still working, body still functioning. Everything is exactly the same, except that the self, the me, that had been totally identified with this body, mind, sense organs, is recognized to be changeless and stable. The same self that I had taken to be one, with this mutual superimposition, I'd taken to be one with this, I recognize is stable and changeless.
The mutual superimposition is the ignorance that's removed.
Well, the ignorance causes the mutual superimposition. So an example of mutual superimposition is that the mind takes itself to be the conscious being, and then it takes the conscious being to have the qualities of the mind. So I, as conscious being, become happy or sad or upset. And the happy, sad, or upset mind is the conscious being. That's the mutual superimposition. So the mind becomes the conscious being, and the conscious being gains the qualities of the mind.
What's the ignorance that leads to that?
Self-ignorance. Ignorance of the nature of your own self, of consciousness itself. Because until you have knowledge of the self, your self is superimposed on the mind, by the mind.
And that's universal.
That's universal, yeah.